Welcome to the Game On Water Polo Podcast. The Game On Water Polo Pod will take a look at water polo growth, culture, and best practices from the perspective of water polo athletes, clubs, parents, referees, and coaches from around the United States. My name is Sean Stringham, and I look forward to create a conversation honoring the history of water polo, but more importantly, talking about what's happening now, and of course, in the future of our sport. My co-host and friend, Janai Kerr, 2004 Athens Olympian, is coming to us live from Princeville, Kauai. Please subscribe, rate, give a five-star review, and share the podcast. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all by searching at GameOnLS. Check out our website, www.goals.co. That's www.goals.co.
So we got all spectrums here. We got me in SoCal shirtless, Janai in Hawaii with a sweatshirt on. Is that
a sweatshirt?
Okay, a t-shirt.
And then I just now I'm more comfortable talking.
There we go.
And Sean, I heard it just started snowing in Utah. Is
that got in the last storm cycle, we got 67 inches of snow up in the mountains. So they're getting hyped to get ready for ski season. So you got to come back out, Tony, and we'll go skiing again this year.
You remember when you saved my son's life and picked him up?
I do remember. It's one of my.
Yeah, I don't know this story. What happened?
Favorite ski memories. So Tony and Sarah and Cruz and I all went up to Brighton to ski after one of the challenges that we ran here in Salt Lake with Tony, and we decked him out in all the ski gear and we're cruising down, and Cruz was doing fantastic, and
he was cruising, but then
as 5-year olds do, just got like cold and stopped and like was done. It's like, okay. So I just went into ski instructor mode and just picked him up and skied him down to the lodge and got him hot chocolate instantly and saved his life. So
people don't realize, and I don't know if you ski, but like I definitely didn't grow up skiing. And then I got to high school where like I could have skied, but then I'm not going to risk my career to ski.
Right.
So I just started like 4 years ago, and I tried snowboarding once, and I fell so many times that I've never been sore in my life that I'm sticking to skiing. But like, dude, I'm just trying to like start this thing, you know?
Tony, do you not know my first junior team, national team experience?
No.
Because you were still younger. Canada, December 26th.
Oh my God.
Back when I had full dreads, I was the water polo version of Cool Runnings. I didn't have anything prepared for cold weather. I had shorts and I layered with the breakaway USA water polo pants over it. Right. Didn't even have a turtleneck. Right. So we get there. I'm freezing. And I didn't know I had to bring my own money for like miscellaneous stuff. I thought everything was paid for. So I was doing every bear bet, even on the plane. So I think Adam Wright dared me to eat an entire can of Altoids. $30. Right. So now I'm getting into -degree weather and I couldn't breathe. Like just even like waiting for the vans to come, because my mouth was burning because it was raw and I'm breathing in freezing cold air. We get to the hotel and the first time I'd ever stepped on ice. Boom, like something out of a cartoon. All 6'8" of me just back on my back.
So you're not a skier then?
Not a skier. Meryl and I end up taking a train. I don't even know where we went because it was before iPhones. Right? We're like, oh, they said, yeah, go this way. We thought it was getting like a trolley, like in San Diego, I'm familiar with. We got on a train in Canada and went left Calgary, and we're like on the way to Toronto or somewhere. Missed practice. No one knew where the goalies were because I was off trying to find a warm jacket.
Well, there's a standing invitation out there for any of your friends or teammates, Janai and Tony, to come to Salt Lake. I'll take you skiing. I'll get you the warm clothing. We'll have a great experience up on the frozen water up there. It's one of my passions. We're excited to ski as a family again this year. And so we'll get you up here. So
let's get back to water polo, what we're more familiar with.
Sounds good.
To you in your next podcast, the water polo Tony one.
So we're here with Tony Acevedo, 5-time Olympian, participated in Rio, London, Beijing, where they won the silver medal, Athens and Sydney. Tony graduated from Stanford, for those of you who didn't know, where he dominated the men's water polo scene. as the Catino Award winner 4 years that he played there, scoring 332 goals. Tony played in Italy, Croatia, Montenegro, and most conversations with Tony that I've ever been in end in some sort of fantastic story around those. So I'm sure we'll get into that as well. And since retirement from the international water polo scene, has founded 6-8 Sports with Sarah Azevedo and now 3-time Olympian Maggie Steffens. Tony recently was on the commentary team for the NBC Olympic coverage of Tokyo 2020. And Tony has his own podcast, the Tony Azevedo podcast, that is hosted by Dave Williamson. A great conversation. I've been a guest on that podcast and it was super fun. And Tony has an incredible lifetime dedicated to water polo. So Tony, thanks for joining us, Janai and I, today from Southern California, where it looks like you just got out of the water from the academy, is my guess. Yeah.
You know me well, Sean, right out of the water, finished with the, 45 minutes of shooting. That's my favorite part to get in.
Yeah.
And now back to the business world a little bit.
Fantastic. Let's talk about 6-8 Sports. It's growing. I mean, you've been growing it quite a bit over the last 4 or 5 years. This podcast trying to focus on sport growth and 6-8 trying to take a look at water polo in a little bit different direction. We've worked together on the series, 6-8 series. We've worked together on Challenge, on Game Desk. Kind of just give us an overview of how you're trying to bring water polo into the modern era with technology and data.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the main thing to me is right now, and a lot of other sports too, no one is focusing on that individual athlete, right? That one parent who has that one kid who's so passionate and wants to be great, but there's no means to tell them where they stand and what they need to do to be great, right? And that's kind of the most frustrating part about sports like water polo that are smaller is like, dude, I see it all the time going around the country, kids with talent, kids that are fast, good, they have heart, parents who are willing to do whatever it takes for them to get there. But yet there's nothing that tells the kid exactly where they are. Here's the drills that you need to do to be great. Right. Yes,
right.
And so that's kind of been the focus. Another focus right now of us is really focusing on how we can money ball water polo. Right. And we've been talking with John Abdu and USA Water Polo a little bit of partnering maybe. And the main idea behind it is like, can we take statistics and measurables, subjectable, and start to collect data over time so we have a better understanding as to where our teams are now, where they're going, where they're trending, and why they're successful? For me, you take the women's team and the men's team are an example, right?
Right.
Like, why did we succeed in 2008? Why did Terry do something different than Ratko Rudic, than John Vargas, than Monty Duszkowski? I mean, on the men's side, I went through 8 different coaches, right? 9 different coaches. What was successful? What was not? On the women's side, they have 3 gold medals.
Yeah.
All right after Guy Baker. Like, what are they doing? Are they testing differently? What are the strengths or the weaknesses? Because we know very well, we all know Cammy Craig, who be in the Hall of Fame coming up, and she's a stud, but her era, that women's team was much different than the women's team that I saw in this last Olympics. So what was the change? How did he measure that? And if we could use that data to better understand where we need to go, I mean, especially for us on the men's side, it could be a game changer. But right now, everything, and this goes to every single club and federation in the world, everything is dependent on the coach, right? And his words. Well, how do we know what he thinks or believes is correct? And we don't, and then we get rid of him, and then got all that information that he gave us for 4 years or 2 years or 1 year at a club is gone. And then comes another guy and we're like, I hope you can save us.
So Tony, you made a reference to Moneyball. I don't know if you know that I actually coached Billy Bean's daughter, so I can connect you guys if you want.
No way. I'd love to do that. 100%. Yeah. We're very close to like fully launching that. So I think that I'd love to have his perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his daughter played polo at Sage Hill.
Yeah.
Well, how about that? That's crazy. One of my favorite movies and stories of all time. I mean, I love that concept and that idea. I mean, you at this point must have hundreds of thousands of lines of data just from this challenge alone being collected all over the world. What are some of the trends that you're seeing in the game? Like, how would you interpret that data early on here as you're collecting that information?
So we just hit 13,000 people gone through the challenge, which is super exciting. And the exciting thing about that is like, you're able to see trends, people who've done it multiple times, people, you know, successful people. And now with the 6.8 series, we got to see so many top level athletes. A trend that I think we, that 100% we found, and again, it always varies a little bit. You're going to get a guy with an amazing radar gun or get a guy who can jump out of his, you know, suit, but mostly people successful at the 12.5, the med ball and the buoy are the most successful in all. When it comes to like those three drills, can you're pretty much on par. The best player in the water is those three. And then we're starting to measure because we're using the game desk. So it's like, how many steals does someone get? Well, the guy who gets the most steals always seems to be the top in the buoy and the vertical jump, right?
Yeah. So you can start to see some correlations that go along with that. Interesting.
Well, yeah, because if you're getting steals in a game, and we had a talk with the Orlando Magic analyst yesterday, actually with Maggie, and one of the, if you're getting a steal in a game, you have long arms or you're super tall, right? That's one reason. You are quick. You can get quickly jump in front of the ball, you know, jump before or beat someone to a ball. And then the second thing is your water polo IQ. You have a high IQ. You can anticipate and you can read. And obviously we can't read an IQ through the challenge, but we can read it through the game desk.
Right.
So now we're kind of covering that basis.
Well, and you've even talked about, you know, with Maggie about that X factor. How do we measure that X factor with an athlete in terms of being able to see those on the undescribable traits of an athlete that just make them great, right? In terms of
like
trying to figure that out.
Brenda Villa, for instance.
Yeah, for exactly.
100%. And a Brenda is a great example because the hard part when you do the challenge is like you sit there and I get it all the time. Mostly it's like the older generation. It's saying, oh, you know, that doesn't measure the best athletes. You're right. It's not meant to measure the best athletes. It's meant to get data to show A, over time, if they're improving, and B, if they are the best athletes, what traits do they have? And then the second part of it, and this is where a Brenda would be perfect in this, because she would be actually amazing in med ball. She'd be amazing in two buoy. She'd be pretty good at the 12.5. And then maybe like me, I'm the radar gun, you're low, vertical jump, probably, you know, obstacle right. Be okay. But guess what? The game desk, she'd be so dominant that it totally make up for her falling right. Maybe in not the top 10 or 15, because she'd have a plus or minus of 10 because she has 4 assists a game, 4 goals, 3 steals, 10 earned, you know, 6 earned ejections. And that's Brenda to an epitome.
Awesome. So, I mean, you had mentioned a little bit about this, but how do clubs and athletes that are outside of California get noticed? I mean, using this system, what's the best way for those kids who want to be great that are maybe not in in Southern California or Northern California proper? How do they progress in the game, in your opinion?
Well, they have to understand the importance of, A, they have to really, coaches have to open their eyes as to where they stand in the world of water polo, where and what the better players have. So what I see a lot is I see the 13, 14, 15-year-old kids, and they're dominant in their hometowns, but they really don't understand how to move over their hips, their legs, and breaststroke kick, or the importance of the med ball, right? Of having strong legs, not just the med ball, but having strong legs in general, of passing. And these three things, you get these players from all over and they're so talented and they work so hard, but they're lacking on just the basics of how to hold a ball, of how to pass correctly, of calming down. So I think that's really where the challenge was built. It's like, where do you stand? This is where you are. You're pretty good. You're not good. And this is things you can do to get better. The other thing is like when you get to a point and then you're in high school, you have to expose yourself to different water polo. Like financially you can do, I was lucky enough. We didn't have money growing up, but I went with my dad on trips as like, you know, kind of like the whatever. It was basically all he'd pay for me and I'd sleep with him in the hotels. So I got to see the exposure from playing against a Hungary or playing against a Serbia at a young age, or it was Yugoslavia then. But if you can't make it to a Europe, make it to California or get outside of your state and see the different types of water polo. Go to a camp somewhere else, right? Janai runs camps, myself. Like there's plenty of opportunities to expose yourself to different water polo, because that's going to help you A, understand truly where you stand, and B, become more, have a higher water polo IQ because you're listening and hearing so many different thought processes, right?
Right. Well, and I think, one that's obvious is that we're coming into the second season of the 6-8 series across the country. I mean, we've got, I believe, Connecticut, Texas, Utah, California named as locations that are going to go. I mean, those are fantastic ways. How would an athlete get involved in one of those to be able to be recognized and see some of that high level play?
So Sean, I think what's been exciting about us doing it together is we've always been trying to solve the issue of how do you get quality games to athletes outside of Southern California or Northern California, wherever the hotbeds are. And this is we've seen how this has evolved, right? We had Jack Merrill sign with Stanford, who wasn't really on that radar before the 6-8 series. We had Greg Carson go to UCLA. We've had so many players sign with top schools because they were good. And then all of a sudden, when they understood where they stood, their level, they got to play against that high level competition, they stood out. And maybe before they didn't, right?
Right.
So yeah, I mean, for us, it's emailing us and getting on the list, and we just try and make it we're pushing the ones that are trying to get to college first, right? Obviously get them exposed, but we also always allow in young players because I think that's also building the whole evolution. If we can have freshmen, sophomore with some of these great players, you're going to already see, you've talked about the great Ben Four, who had that awesome tournament, and he was great in the series. He's a little freshman. Well, now he's a sophomore. Right. And now other kids are going to look up to him and whatnot, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's so fun to watch those kids. Even I went to every one of those series last year, and we obviously live streamed them, but those kids got so much better from one camp to the next. I mean, it's fantastic. I've seen even my own kids from Olympus who have participated. They've gone on to see some great things happening as well. So it's exciting to see.
And explain to me this, and Janai, you're perfect to answer this. Like, I had a coach tell me that the problem with the 6-8 series, right? And again, we've had all the top schools, the top eight, all of them responded that they love our videos and they're watching. But I had a coach say, I'd like to see these players play in a system. And I said, why? That you can, they're all in high school. You can go watch them in a system. A system's easy to play. Hey, you swim here, you do that. I want to see them. And this is the best thing that we saw on the series is the first two games were terrible.
Always. Yeah.
They don't know. Yeah,
you see that even with like national teams at different age groups, right? Whether it's youth or cadet, when there's new people playing together and getting to being accustomed to playing with new players in different positions, it takes time to work out the kinks.
100%. And that's the whole point is like, by the third, fourth, the last game almost always went in. There was a game that went in on the last day to overtime. It's because they learn to communicate with each other. Hey, our team doesn't have a strong center. I'm going to post up. They learn how to play. And then you talk, you want to shine at college when you show up. You want to shine on the national team when you show up. Well, guess what, bud? You got to learn how to play in any kind of system. You got to learn how to adapt, how to talk to your teammates, be a leader, right? Take over roles. And that's where I see a big value in this.
Yeah. So just quick question. Tony, what level was this coach coming from? Was it a collegiate coach? Was it a high school coach?
Division I collegiate coach.
So that again, that's their preference, right? They might have their own recruiting preferences, and it's not for everybody. But if you can, you're never going to have a one size fits all, especially in a sport like ours. Sure. But my thing is the number one thing I think that hasn't made this work in the past is there's just not enough data, right? It's not baseball. It's not basketball. Bailey is the first person who came up with this idea, pitched it to me over 10 years ago. He's like, Janai, you're with Nike, make a Nike water polo combine. It's like, Bales, it would have to be replicated the same way throughout the entire country to make it standardized. And it was way too overwhelming for me. Then comes along Tony, and you took on that challenge, right? And so with that challenge, I think, over time, you said 13,000 athletes have gone through the system. So the more athletes that go through it, the more data you're going to have and the easier it is going to be break down. I mean, James Graham has done it at UOP, with this one particular college team, but being able to standardize it for the nation is a task I would never want to take on myself. So hey, thank you for doing it. And it's starting to work out. And I think it's only going to get better.
Yeah. How do clubs get involved? If a club wants to run the 6-8 challenge, what's the best way for them to get connected with 6-8?
It's just reach out. So we have like PV 680, you know, we have our international. So this is we're trying to standardize this around the world. Janai, Australia is probably the biggest one right now that we're working with. Just reach out to us. And the way it works, we have a lot of ways it works. One of the ways
he means Sarah Azevedo.
That's right. My wife. You know, the email there and whatever it says, it's my wife, even if it says, but yeah, just reach out. And essentially all we're doing is giving you data, right? And hopefully at the end of the year, you can start to see trends for coaches, for players. Hey, this entire team is improving in every category. Or hey, this one player is not improving. That's a player problem, right? If the whole team's not improving, then we can think about new drills for the coaches. And we're really just there to support. People think it's like, oh, you know, it's some financial burden. No, it's not. I usually just come to a camp, teach you how to be certified. Yeah. And then it's on you. And then all Maggie and I do is give you feedback as to like what these kind of red or yellow or whatever the results mean, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we've run it at Olympus for a couple of years and my kids we're wrapping up our fall high school season. My kids are already asking, when are we going to run the 6-8 challenge again? They love it. It's just a part of the fiber of what we do. They want to see where their results are and how they've progressed. So we're excited about that. So
you know who'd be amazing at it would be Janai. And Janai would be one of those. He'd be one of those. I know for a fact that he would do his goalie drills because they're specific goalie, and then he'd go into the field and do all our drills, and then probably beat all of us.
He would win all of them. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I remember doing some Kez and Tony, and I don't remember this, Tony. When I had like a double barring off of a demonstration, like, you can't show me up on this. You have to let me do the shooting.
Yes, you would throw out some ridiculous shots. Somehow it'd be like a pinch bar. And I'm like, Jesus, Janai, like, you're a holy guy, man.
It's the swimming that gets me, is having someone hang on you for 25 meters and then have to swim back on defense and transition. And then when it's your turn to shoot, have the same thing. But yeah, for these type of drills, this would have been my bread and butter. The vertical jump. Oh, I remember even when Racco's coach, he was telling me some stories about Tempeste doing some ridiculous things. So I would stay after practice and make sure I beat Tempeste's touches by two. Remember the jugs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The jugs. Brian Alexander, who we're going to actually have on the show coming up soon, I guess he did 60 jugs and was super proud in an hour. So that night, I did 61. And then same thing with Bales. I got down to two jugs. So I was doing one in each hand. And as strong as Bales is, his wrists weren't strong enough to support it. But because of all those damn fingertip push-ups, I had strong wrists.
Don't you tell Bales that. He'll deny that till he dies. But yeah, so we're referring to Bales, Ryan Bailey, four-time Olympian, also silver medalist. He's one of our good friends. And it is true that he was the first to come up with the idea of the challenge. Like we joke around about it. But he was 100% the first, kept telling all of us. And then as I traveled around the world, it was one of those like, wow, I think this could actually work, you know?
So that's actually a perfect lead into the question that we're going to close on here, just for interest of time. I mean, you look back at that silver medal effort in 2008, you have guys like Adam Wright, Merrill Moses, Ryan Bailey, yourself. What made that group special? Like, what made that... I mean, obviously you're great water polo players, you go on, but you have remained tight and enjoy each other's company ever since. So, I mean, what has made that group so special for water polo in America?
Well, I'm going to say three things that massively contributed to our success. And the first was the time when 2000 to 2004, the Racco Rudic, my dad was the assistant then, that time brought us together more than anything. I mean, Janai was a part of that quad. The things that we had to go through, the trainings that we had to endure, gave us so much self-confidence, right? Like, we could do anything. I mean,
right.
He even said, Racco, greatest coach in the world, that he experimented with us. Like, he couldn't believe that we could continue swimming for this amount of time. And when you have that commitment, Racco, you can say tons. Everyone has opinions on Ratko, but one thing he did so well was bring together the team. And with us, it was about A, the personnel, guys who really help the team. Janai's a great team player. Adam Wright, myself. I mean, guys that just really are there that bring and uplift the team, because that's so crucial.
Right.
And of course, the fact that we're training so much, we all kind of hated him. So we banded together as a crew. And I think that in itself was huge. Then you go on to that terrible 2.5 years where we had Guy Baker as a coach. Then they fired him. We had my dad as a coach. Then they fired him. And it kind of left us in this moment, like, I don't know if people know this, but qualifying for the Pan American Games for the 2008 Olympics, like, the coach, because Terry Schroeder was the assistant, had a job. The coach was Adam and I and Bales. And it was and so we took ownership in this team. It was like, whatever happens, it's on us now, guys. Like, we can't not train all out. We can't not, believe in ourselves and be humble. Like, if we lose, it's on us. And then I think that last tipping board was the fact that so many of us were overseas. Right.
Yeah.
And we came back, we got that experience, that confidence. Now we can play against the Europeans. We had that from Ratko. And then Terry and Robert Lynn did a phenomenal job. Of Robert got us in the greatest shape of our lives. And he knew he could do whatever he wanted with us because we took ownership, and Terry did a great job for me as a captain, for all the athletes, just to understand of humility and playing together, and sometimes less is more. And we won that, you know.
Hey, Tony, going back to that qualification game though, in Brazil against Brazil, do you remember what happened that morning?
Yeah.
When we thought we got kidnapped?
We're in the
in Brazil.
No, okay, explain. Hold on.
Were you not on the bus with us?
Oh my god, yes, I was on the bus. Yes.
You've played so many games, so many Pan Am, so many Olympics, that you almost forgot about being kidnapped in Brazil and taken to the favelas, all to be rescued by the SWAT team, and finding out that we actually weren't kidnapped, that the guy was just lost. You don't remember that?
No, I totally remember that. And it's crazy because you guys asked me, and I hadn't really lived in Brazil. I only knew really, I ended up living 4 years in Brazil. That was the last contract I had. But you guys were like, Tony, this doesn't seem right. I'm like, this definitely doesn't seem right. I texted somebody in like Portuguese, and then they wrote back and they're like, dude, what is happening? And then all of us are freaking out. You were like going to go get the bus.
No, so basically we got morning training, right? And we're going to go back to the village, eat something, take a rest, and go back to the gold medal game to qualify for the Olympics. And instead of going back to the village, the bus drivers drove us literally in the opposite direction. And I was like, I can't see the statue anymore. In 2 hours, where are we? Well, must have been traffic, must have been detour. And then all of a sudden, these black SUVs flank the bus and run us off the road and start screaming and yelling. Jesse tries to get off the front of the bus.
Oh, my gosh.
And they point guns at him. They grab the bus driver, throw him in the dirt. I try to get out of the back window. And I've got some of the biggest artillery guns pointing my face. It's like, oh, they're going to blow us up. We're just done. They get the bus driver back on the bus with a gun to his head, start screaming in Portuguese. I don't know if you understood what they were saying, but I didn't speak Portuguese. And they take us off the freeway into the favelas, and there's no place to turn around because it's too narrow. So it gets deeper and deeper. It's like, oh, they're just hijacking all of us. It turns out that was the rescue squad that came to rescue an American team that they thought was hijacked by the bus driver, who had actually just gotten lost. Like 2.5 hours later now, we get back on the freeway. There's a helicopter giving us an escort. We get back to the village, and it turns out that it was all mixed up, supposedly, even though we were playing Brazil in Brazil, and we didn't get a time to eat a meal or take a nap, but we still came back and won the game.
Yeah, and that happens more than you think, dude. Remember in Rome, I was woken up at 2 a.m. the day before we played Italy, taken to the police station.
I forgot that. My memory is just as bad as yours.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Taken to the police station. I sat there. They claimed there was something wrong with my visa, that I was like a criminal bullshit. Next thing I know, about 3 hours before our game, I'm released to go back home. I hadn't eaten. I've been up since 2 a.m. You know, Terry and Barbara Kalbas, the great, was over there trying to help out. Next thing I know, everything was dropped. I show up, I eat, I go to the game, and don't worry about it. I scored 6 goals and we beat Italy in the first game.
In Italy, in Rome, yeah.
In Italy. Well, when games start going the wrong way, we have a saying, like, you know, when the USA plays Hungary in Hungary, you have to beat everyone, not just the teams, right? Or Italy in Rome. I guess you have the same thing happening. So
when in Rome,
that's hilarious. Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Well, dude, thank you guys for having me, man.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. And like I said in the intro, Tony and crew has some stories to tell. So one of my goals here, Tony, is to get you and your and get Adam and Merrill and Ryan Bailey and your teammate all on the same podcast and talk about teammates, the power of teammates. I think that would be incredible for the people to see those interactions. But I know you've got to go. Thanks for joining us. One last thing. I know you have the newspaper and coffee as your pregame routine, but do you have your favorite hype song of all time that you used to listen to?
Ooh, so I was opposite. See, everyone would sit there, listen to hype. Merrill should be deaf. He should be deaf. The music was so loud that the whole bus could hear. But I would actually just listen to either like something soft or no music. I just focused on reading, and that was it. I was so crazy when it came into the water. I just needed to calm down, and music got me too pumped.
Cool. Very cool. Tony, thanks so much.
Good to see you.
All right. Bye-bye.
See ya. Game on. See you guys.
Game on. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
In our show notes is a link you can use to send us a voice message. If you have a question or comment, don't hesitate to send it, and we will incorporate it into the podcast. Please subscribe, rate, give a 5-star review, and share the podcast. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all by searching at GameOnLS. Check out our website, www.goals.co. That's www.goals.co. We are just trying to make a journey to be the voice for sport growth in the water polo wilderness. Always honor the game and keep your head on a pivot. Until next time, peace.